The headlines this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution condemns the West for his silence on the ongoing Israeli onslaught against the Palestinians in Gaza. 166 days into the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip, the death toll of Palestinians is nearing 32,000, mostly women and children. And the Israeli army fails to intercept a Yemeni missile over the port of Eilat, which, according to its CEO, has been paralyzed by Yemen's Red Sea operations. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies have long attempted to bring the country's economy to a collapse, but to no avail.
For long years, the adversaries have been trying to bring us to our knees economically. Very seriously, the adversaries have been doing this. We have seen this in the antagonistic moves of the United States and its cronies in the course of the time. They mean to see the economic collapse of Iran. They intend to bring the country to its knees in terms of economy. Of course, on the back of determination and efforts of our youth and lots of attempts and efforts made both by the people and the statesmen, the enemies have failed to do so. And they will still fail to do the same thing.
Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran has witnessed outstanding improvements in various domains in the past year, despite efforts by the enemies to instill hopelessness among the people. He made the remarks on the occasion of the Persian New Year. The leader elaborated on this year's slogan that is surge in production through people's participation. He underlined that the growth in production will be possible only with the participation of all people. Ayatollah Khamenei further highlighted the great capacities that Iran enjoys, noting that such potential, if properly used, will ensure further economic success. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader touched on Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, calling it the most pressing issue before the world.
Now, as for international issues, the one with the highest priority is the issue of Palestine, the issue of Gaza.
The leader added that the bloodshed unfolding in Gaza exposes the true face of the so-called advanced Western civilization. He said the West has not only been standing idly by in the face of the massacre of Palestinians, but it has also been supporting Israel financially and militarily. Ayatollah Khamenei also praised the resistance front, saying the events happening in West Asia have revealed the capacity and power of the resistance against Zionism. He added the regional resistance groups have thwarted the plots of the Israeli regime and its Western backers, especially the U.S. Israel keeps dropping bombs and firing artillery shells on Gaza, further indicating the regime's specific goal to commit genocide in the besieged territory. Here is a video showing critically injured Palestinians at a hospital, following fresh airstrikes on the Nusayrat camp in central Gaza. There were new airstrikes on the Barej refugee camp, also in central Gaza. Over three dozen Palestinians lost their lives in the latest Israeli bombardment of the two camps. The Israeli military also once again opened fire at Gaza aid seekers, killing at least 30 of them. It took place when the regime forces targeted a gathering of popular committees formed to secure the transfer of aid from the Kuwait roundabout to Gaza City. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza since October the 7th has topped 31,900. Over 74,000 have also been injured. The Israeli military has admitted that a missile fired from Yemen hit the vicinity of Eilat port in the occupied Palestinian territories. That came after the Yemeni army spokesman announced the operation against the port.
The missile forces also launched a number of winged missiles at Israeli targets in the Umm al-Rashash area in southern occupied Palestine.
Yahya Sarieh said that a cruise missile was launched from Yemen's territorial waters in the Red Sea toward the occupied territories. The regime's Iron Dome and Arrow missile defense systems failed to intercept the missile. There's still no report of casualties or damage, as the military claims the missile fell in an unpopulated area. The head of the Eilat port told media that ship traffic at the port has been paralyzed since Yemen's anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea began mid-November. He said that every month between 12 and 13 ships entered and departed the port, but the number is now zero. We talked about the Iran's leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, in terms of some of the statements that he made on the Nowruz messages on two occasions, such as Iran witnessing outstanding improvements in various domains, a lot of it economically based. Let's bring in some analysis into the picture and have Hakimeh Sagaberia join us. She's an academic and political analyst. Welcome to the program, and Happy New Year to you. Tell us about the importance of Iran's leader's speech, where a lot of it had to deal with the economy, but also in the specter of how the enemy's efforts have failed, since that has been one of their motivations, is to bring Iran to its knees economically.
Yes, Iran has faced hybrid warfare ever since the inception of the Islamic Republic of Iran, basically since the victory of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and economic warfare has been part of that. Of course, there has been other types of warfare in that hybrid situation. We have had military warfare and other kinds of war, including propaganda, which the military aspect of it has been basically neutralized. But the economic aspect and the propaganda aspect are still ongoing. And on the part of the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran, there seems to be some hope that they can achieve some of their goals from those two routes, the economic route and the propaganda route. So basically, I think the gist of the speech of the leader of the Islamic Republic today was tackling those two fronts. And of course, Iran has been trying to overcome some of the economic problems of dealing with this hybrid warfare for the last, as I said, from the inception of the Islamic Republic, but also especially after the end of the Iran-Iraq war, when this hybrid warfare concentrated on the economic aspect. You have had the whole nation of Iran under economic sanctions. Basically, the whole people of Iran have been punished for their support of the Islamic Republic or for basically being Iranian, being part of this picture. So the effort is to neutralize this aspect of hybrid warfare as well. Of course, Iran has been successful in neutralizing the economic warfare in terms of making, because the goal was to make the Iran's economy paralyzed. Basically, there has been talk of paralyzing, debilitating sanctions. But we have not seen those kind of problems in Iran. Iran has been able to move around the sanctions, maneuver basically in a way that anyone who comes to Iran sees that everything is, the affairs of the country are running. It's not that we have a failed state here. But because Iran is a nation that has a lot of potential for progress, and that was part of the leader's speech as well. Iran wants to have a resilient economy in a way that outside pressure cannot not only halt its progress, but not even diminish the speed and the strength of the progress that we are talking about. So. The aim is to, have a resilient economy, an economy that is strong enough from inside that in the end, basically the economic aspect of that hybrid warfare is going to be neutralized as well. So we would be in a situation where, Iran could stand on its feet in every aspect, military-wise, economic-wise, and in terms of, and of course, one of the main aspects of that is the people of Iran. So the propaganda warfare has to be neutralized as well.
Thank you very much.
I would like to apologize if my power runs out. I see that I have some problems with my power right now.
We actually reached the end of our time here, but thank you for your contribution. Hakimeh Sagaberia there, academic and political analyst. Thank you so much. The Canadian government has decided to stop exporting weapons to Israel following a motion that was ratified by the House of Commons. Earlier, we discussed the decision in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
On this segment of the program, the Canadian government has decided to stop exporting weapons to Israel following a motion that was ratified by the House of Commons. The foreign minister announced that Ottawa will no longer allow weapons exports to Israel. That came after lawmakers endorsed a wide-ranging package that also called for a halt to weapons shipments to Tel Aviv. Melanie Joly emphasized that although the parliamentary measure is non-binding, the Canadian government has heeded the call to stop arming Israel. The move has angered the Israeli regime. Foreign Minister Israel Katz denounced the Canadian decision, claiming that, quote, history will judge. Canada's House of Commons approved the halt in weapons sales to Israel on Monday following a heated debate.
The European Union states that Netanyahu is using deliberate starvation of children in Gaza as a weapon of war. Human rights groups have spoken out against targeting of journalists, civilians, hospitals, aid workers. And the UN has called out for Canada for complicity in this because we provide the military weapons to Israel. Last night, Parliament called for an end to military aid to Netanyahu's government. And yet numerous military supply deals are still in the works. So will the minister respect Parliament and tell us whether or not deals like the guns from Colt and Kitchener and armed vehicles from Rochelle and Brampton will be sent to Israel, yes or no?
Canada had previously paused issuing military export permits to Israel amid the public outcry, but said it was still assessing applications on a case-by-case basis. But the issue remained at the heart of controversy as lawmakers and rights activists were demanding a complete ban on weapons to Israel. A Canadian pro-Palestine advocacy group has called the parliamentary motion a small step forward for ending the country's complicity in Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Canada has witnessed several mass anti-Israel rallies with demonstrators calling on the government to stop supporting the Tel Aviv regime. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have journalist and commentator Sando Salasa, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Also, we have Palestinian journalist Nadia Salimi joining us from Al-Khalil, Palestine. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's start off with Ms. Al-Assad in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Please share with us your thoughts on this recent initiative coming from Canada, and are we seeing the public pressure finally weighing in on some of these countries that are supporting Israel?
I don't think that it's enough because you know that the Western governments are able to pressure the Zionist colonial regime to stop this genocidal war crime that is being committed against the Palestinian people. And this again shows that those hypocritical governments are taking part and they are complicit in this, in these crimes and atrocities, heinous atrocities that are being held against the Palestinian people, especially against the children and the women and the journalists in Palestine, especially in the Gaza Strip. So I don't take it as a positive move, because at the end of the day, this can be also considered that is a movement just to calm down the public opinion and the people who have run a lot of rallies to protest against the these aids that Canada is giving for the Zionist occupation at the time that Canada claims to be an incubator and a beacon of human rights and of protecting civilians.
Ms. Nadia Salimi, I want to get your thoughts as well on this parliamentary motion from Ottawa. The Canadian Foreign Minister has stated that the Canadian government has heeded the call to stop arming Israel. Unpack that for us, please.
Well, honestly, I'm very surprised that it's taken this long. I expected more from Canada as a former permanent resident. I'm very disappointed, but I do think that this motion is part of a package of more motions. So there was also a call for a ceasefire that so far has not been implemented, obviously. The motions were non-binding, which, again, is also quite disappointing. So I agree, it is a first step. It is a step in the right direction, but we are nowhere near where we should be, especially considering the magnitude of the atrocities that are being committed by the Israeli occupation.
Thanks to Sandos Al-Assad, journalist and commentator, joining us from Beirut, and thanks to Palestinian journalist Nadia Salimi, joining us from Al-Khalil. That brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review.
That does it for this edition of World News. Thank you so much for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has said the Biden administration greenlighted the Israeli regime's massacre of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. She denounced Washington's arms aid to Israel as state-sponsored violence. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations Human Rights Chief has expressed dismay concerning the brutality with which the Israeli regime is leading its ongoing months-long war of genocide in Gaza. Volker Turk told the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland, on Thursday, 29th of February, there appear to be no bounds to and no words to capture the horrors that are unfolding before our eyes in Gaza. Tens of thousands of Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been massacred as a result of the Israeli military's onslaught in Gaza. Israel launched its campaign on 7th of October last year, following the Al-Aqsa storm operation, a surprise operation by Gaza's resistance movement against the occupied Palestinian territories. Volker Turk condemned the brutality of the Israeli response as appalling and entirely wrong. Meanwhile, the UN official warned about the pending dire consequences of a ground invasion that the Israeli regime has threatened to stage against the southern Gaza city of Rafah. More than 1.5 million of Gaza's 2.4 million plus population have fled to Rafah in southern Gaza Strip, finding nowhere else safe across the coastal sliver. Volker Turk said such a grand assault would contravene the orders issued by the United Nations' highest court. On 26th of January, the International Court of Justice at The Hague, Netherlands, said Israel had to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of the Genocide Convention. Volker Turk said, "I fail to see how such an operation could be consistent with the binding provisional measures issued by the International Court of Justice. The prospect of an Israeli ground assault on Rafah would take the nightmare being inflicted on the Palestinians of Gaza into a new dimension." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The European Union has wrapped a recent unjustifiable attack by the Israeli occupation forces on Palestinian civilians seeking food aid in the besieged Gaza Strip, calling for an international investigation into the deadly incident. In a statement on Saturday, 2nd of March, the European Union foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, condemned the restrictions imposed by Israel on the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza and the opening of Gaza's crossing points. He said the firing by Israeli troops on civilians trying to access foodstuff is unjustifiable. Josep Borrell added, "We request an impartial international investigation on this tragic event, allowing for a clear picture of the events and responsibilities." At least 112 people were martyred and more than 750 others were injured on Thursday, 29th of February, as the Israeli military opened fire on Palestinians who had surrounded a convoy of 38 aid trucks in Gaza, with the Palestinian Health Ministry calling the incident a massacre. The latest Israeli crime comes as non-governmental organizations and United Nations experts have on several occasions voiced fears of famine in Gaza. Gaza has been completely cut off from aid by the Israeli regime since October of last year. The European Union foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, emphasized that Israel shoulders responsibility of complying with the rules of international law and to protect the distribution of humanitarian aid to the civilian population of Gaza. The top EU diplomat pointed out the responsibility for this incident lays on the restrictions imposed by the Israeli army and obstructions by violent extremists to the supply of humanitarian aid. Josep Borrell warned that the restrictions on the entry of humanitarian assistance contribute to creating scarcity, hunger and disease, saying it would also lead to a level of desperation that brings about violence. He added, "Unabated fighting and disregard for international humanitarian law will lead to complete chaos, making the distribution of humanitarian aid impossible." Josep Borrell stressed the need to restore a minimum of order and security in Gaza to preserve a humanitarian space. Borrell added, "We urge Israel to fully cooperate with the United Nations agencies and other humanitarian actors involved in the humanitarian response and to allow free, unimpeded and safe humanitarian access through all crossing points in Gaza." The EU's top diplomat also urged Israel to swiftly remove the obstacles at the Kerem Shalom crossing and open the access in the north at Karni and Eretz crossings, to open the port of Ashdod to humanitarian aid and to allow a direct humanitarian corridor from Jordan into Gaza. He emphasized that airdrops should be a solution of last resort, given their minimal impact and their risk to civilians. Borrell also urged the United Nations Security Council to call for an urgent cessation of hostilities in Gaza. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has said the Biden administration greenlighted the Israeli regime's massacring of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Ilhan Omar denounced Washington's arms aid to Israel, calling it state-sponsored violence. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar made the statement at a press conference on Thursday, 29th of February, along with other U.S. lawmakers, including Representative Rashida Tlaib, Democrat of Michigan, as she voiced concerns about the high death toll of Palestinian civilians and the displacement of over 1 million people in the Gaza Strip, criticizing the Biden administration for approving additional aid to Israel without congressional approval. Ilhan Omar said, "This administration cannot claim to be an honest broker of peace while greenlighting the massacring of Palestinians in Gaza." The restocking of Israel's arsenal is not foreign policy, it is state-sponsored violence waged against defenseless families who want only to live in peace. Ilhan Omar stressed, if we truly want to uplift humanity to protect the innocent people of Gaza, to bring hostages safely home, to hold out hope for peace, then we must demand a ceasefire in Gaza right now. Ilhan Omar also expressed disappointment with the response from the United States and the world's political leaders to Israeli atrocities in Gaza, underlining that empty rhetoric about human rights without any meaningful action is unacceptable. The Democratic congresswoman from Minnesota said the Biden administration's policies lack effective pressure on Israel and fail to deter the Israeli regime from continuing with its crimes against Palestinians. Ilhan Omar added, despite the clarity surrounding Gaza's despair, the response from political leaders has been nothing short of callous. Empty rhetoric about human rights ring hollow when no action follows. She added, this administration's policies fail to meaningfully pressure the Israeli regime through restrictions, sanctions, or any hint of consequences. Each war crime and violation compiled by journalists, human rights groups, and United Nations agencies are bearing witness.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. In response to the countries and the nations who dare to take their destiny in their own hands, to self-government, to self-determination, to simply be independent,
a simplemente ser independientes,
the imperialist forces and the imperialist countries take different measures. One of the most perverse measures are the blockades and sanctions. Particularly those exercised by the United States, also by Western Europe, and sometimes even by some international organizations such as the United Nations. Beware. The main function of these blockades is to try to complicate the life to the inhabitants of the countries with whom they have contradictions and want them to change their way of thought, government, and administration. Because it seems that freedom, free trade, and self-determination does not exist for them. Of course, it doesn't exist. And they immediately take measures that in some cases have resulted in very serious issues in nutrition, medicine, and the most essential elements in some countries. That is to say, who is ultimately punished is the people who receive the sanctions.
Los gobiernos que han sido sancionados,
the governments that have been constantly sanctioned have become stronger in relation to their population.
Y han cambiado el modelo de desarrollo.
And have changed the development model in such a way that as the great Chinese leader and founder of the People's Republic of China, Mao Zedong, said, the reactionaries lift the rock in their hands to such an extent that when they hold it up, it falls off on their own feet, and the sanctions become something negative for those who have imposed them.
Y se convierten las sanciones en algo negativo para quienes la han llevado adelante. Así tenemos, por ejemplo, que...
Thus, for example, among 17 sanctioned countries with the highest number of sanctioned companies, individuals, and private entities,
particulares,
Some have been strengthened to such a level, as is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, which has had sanctions since 1950. The Republic of Cuba, which has had sanctions since 1960, and almost total since 1962, and the Islamic Republic of Iran since
1979.
Well, we also have Venezuela, where we have Venezuela today that is satisfying almost 90% of its food consumption through internal production, something that has never been in history. The sanctioned countries, Nicaragua and Russia, strengthen their internal construction, their internal market, their internal industry in such a way that they advance scientifically and militarily, deepening their independence and sovereignty, which has been a setback for imperialism. It is true that a cost that had to be paid. And that affects the people, all the inhabitants of the country that is sanctioned. It is the madness of imperialism, that fanatic thing of subduing others through hunger. This is what the gringos and North Americans do. This is what the Americans do. But it goes against them. Today, in the Gaza Strip, Gazans are the most sanctioned on the planet. There, not even medicines, water, or anything else is allowed to enter. Zionism and its godfather, North American imperialism, are the ones leading it. The people are wise. They persevere on the path of independence and sovereignty. The sanctions have proven to be a fiasco at the end of the day. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, para hablar desde sanciones y bloqueos.
Today, we have a guest from Italy to talk about sanctions and blockade by imperialist powers against nations, governments, and countries.
Él es Fabrizio Casari.
Fabrizio Casari, Italian journalist and international analyst, expert in analyzing economic sanctions and punitive measures applied by capitalist powers against nations.
Capitalista a los pueblos.
Fabrizio Casari, welcome to Black and White.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Fabrizio, ubiquémonos en nuestra época desde el punto de vista contemporáneo.
At the current historical stage, what are the goals, consequences, and manifestations of these policies and sanctions by the imperialist powers?
De sanciones y bloqueos por parte de las potencias imperialistas.
La política de bloqueo y de sanciones es parte de...
The policy of blockade and sanctions is called the fourth and fifth generation war, depending on who brings it up. The modern war, which the unipolar world starts, is to simply prevent the world from becoming multipolar. In order to prevent the loss of its hegemonic role as a group, the West is increasingly using all the tools of the fifth generation war, that is, diplomacy, politics, and above all, the media and sanctions, which are the tools of this war. Sanctions today affect 17 countries with specific and selective measures and 6 countries with general measures. We must note that the type of these actions can be general or targeted at individuals. Therefore, a total of 23 countries have been targeted by unilateral, illegitimate, and illegal sanctions. We are talking about 72% of the world's population and more than 30% of the entire world's GDP. I said this to understand the size and the scope of this action. Sanctions, on the other hand, result from a clear but unfair desire to win a competition, competing with products and markets. When you ban the export of a country's products and when you have the same product, you will be the only option for purchase. Furthermore, when you prevent a country from using the international transaction withdrawal system, things get more complicated. The effect of this action is not only on your target country, but also on all countries that want to do business with it. This gets even more complicated when you block a country from accessing SWIFT transactions and also block it from using the dollar currency. When a country is sanctioned, the only option left is to buy Western goods. With these conditions, the West keeps its economy in a state of addiction and says that it is the best and biggest economy, but no, the reason is sanctions. As I told you, sanctions are not a substitute for war. Many times you are told that sanctions are a substitute for war. This is a lie. Sanctions are the art of war. This should be clarified. And in the following, we will see their dire goals.
Entonces esto habría que quedarlo claro. Y vamos a ver después cuáles son sus objetivos finales, ¿no?
Así es. Las sanciones son parte de la guerra. Ahora bien, ¿cómo los pueblos?
Yes, that's right. Sanctions are part of the war. Now, according to the current situation that we are witnessing, the situation has changed. As we know, we see American countries that have stood up for their rights, and how the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has strengthened in science and the military sector, etc. And Venezuela has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
La propia Rusia, ¿no es cierto? Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día.
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado.
Jamás, ni uno. Ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means U.S. sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean specifically the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources, and political identity to the West, or in fact, America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Sí, lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, When the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they're not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to sum up this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the U.S., the U.S. liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera...
A stupid strategy, as you said, Fabricio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
Que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira,
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact, all sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Mucho. Y todos al final salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if the technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, he sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza.
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment, and this way it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made, in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because, as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the U.S. tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad for emergencies that can happen. Now, almost all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, if I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. and they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock, and many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabrizio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. Adiós.
Adiós.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Nowruz is the day when Dajjal will be killed by Imam Mehdi. March 23rd, 2018. The day Dajjal is to be killed by Imam Mehdi alayhi salam, in the final era of time, that day is Nowruz. Even according to some narrations, the day Adam alayhi salam descended on earth was on Nowruz. Nowruz means a new day in the history of mankind and a new state in the life of humankind. What matters is our intentions and actions during Nowruz. Nowruz has always meant a new day and a new state. With regards to nature, the first day of Aries, which is used to indicate the beginning of spring, is regarded as a new day. However, the new day is not restricted to renewal in nature. Some narrations from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam about Nowruz well imply that they, based on the tradition in Islam, which everywhere took the traditions, customs, and words and changed their contents, did the same with Nowruz. When the Imam alayhi salam was asked, what is Nowruz? He, according to some narrations, answered, do you know what Nowruz is? He didn't say, "Do you know when Nowruz is?" He stated, "Do you know what Nowruz is?" Then, on the meaning of Nowruz or what Nowruz is, there are different explanations among different narrations. For instance, the day Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, appointed Imam Ali alayhi salam to the post of Khilafat was on Nowruz. Or, in another occasion, the day Dajjal, Antichrist, is to be killed by Imam Mahdi alayhi salam in the final era of time, that day is Nowruz. Even according to some narrations, the day Adam alayhi salam descended on earth was on Nowruz.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Nowruz means a new day in the history of mankind and a new state in the life of humankind. Apparently, the Imam alayhi salam does not want to say that the day these events occurred or will occur is, or will be, on the first day of Aries. This interpretation is highly unlikely to be intended by the Imam. Instead, these examples are used to clarify the true meaning of Nowruz. Nowruz is the day that you, by your actions or by the event that takes place, bring about renewal. The day of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, when the people of Iran created a great event, with the help of God, is a new day, Nowruz. The day the Imam of the Ummah, Imam Khomeini, assertively spoke against the world's arrogant and aggressive front, the US, that day was a new day and a new path, Nowruz. This was a new event that took place. We should create a new day out of Nowruz. Nowruz is a new day for nature. The human aspect of it relies on our efforts that we bring about as a new day.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.